tonight we remember Sean Rocks, our colleague and friend and the presenter of Arena since its inception in 2009, who sadly died yesterday. Tonight, we'll have tributes from people across the arts community, and we would love to hear your memories of Sean as well. You can text us on 51551. For now, we're going to begin with some music from Mark Redmond. Mark Redmond. Mark, what's that called?
That's a lament called Sé Fáinne Mhór, which is the Irish for the reason for my sorrow.
There was a lovely post of yourself and Sean on Instagram today. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I used to love coming in once or twice a year in advance of any of the big concerts with the likes of the Symphony Orchestra in the concert hall. And it was always very welcoming. Always looked forward to it. You were never nervous. He was just that type of person. And the odd time he'd come along to the concert afterwards and we'd have a good drink and have a bit of crack about it and everything else. So I really miss him big time.
We're going to hear a little bit more from you later on in the programme. I'm being joined by many, many guests, both here in studio and further afield tonight, all of whom wanted to be part of the programme. Initially with me are author Anne Enright and actor Eileen Walsh, and I think Aina Hardwick is also going to be joining us on the phone as well. Anne, I'll start with you. Maybe tell me some of your memories of Sean.
Well, I actually met Sean in 1988 when he made the leap from being a school teacher to an actor. Mm-hmm. One of his first shows, maybe even the first, was a little play in the Focus Theatre, which was written and directed by my husband, Martin Murphy. So that was a long time ago. He did a decade in the theatre. And one of my fondest recollections now today is last year going back to Rough Magic Theatre Company, the special he did, and the relish he had and how much he enjoyed the breadth of his knowledge of all the people in the room, all the work that was done and the various paths that people had taken. And he was a very happy, it seemed happy MC. But I think with Sean, he was such a top class interviewer and presenter. You didn't know how much work and preparation had gone into the whole thing. Like, it was all very smooth and easy going on the surface, but you knew that he had put in the work and was working hard underneath.
What was he like as an actor when you saw him first?
He was very much himself. He was very much himself. And it was, I think, a surprise in the acting community when he took off to Lyric. Like, what was that all about? And and his background, his family background in music was then became more and more apparent, and his complete sort of passionate engagement with classical and Irish music.
Eileen, you were on fairly recently talking to Sean about the second woman at the Midsummer Festival. What was he like as an interviewer?
Yeah, he was amazing as an interviewer because he would ask questions that referenced previous work that he had seen. Like, his knowledge of past work was so beautiful, and it was such a kind of an insider's view because he had been an actor. He kind of knew the cost to a performance, you know, and it always felt like, when I heard the news this morning, I was just saying to Anne outside that when I heard the news this morning, I kind of felt like I felt like I knew him, and the only time I knew him would be in the studio, you know, but he allowed us feel like we were incredibly close. So I don't know how those people are feeling who really knew him so well, because I feel shocked. I feel the loss of him in our lives, you know. He was an incredible interviewer.
Do you think being an actor and being a good actor at that made him a better broadcaster in those circumstances?
Absolutely. I think he had all the feels, you know. Everything, every part of him was kind of subjected to his emotions, which was why he was able to connect with musicians and writers and actors. And, you know, his show would go from, you know, a synchronized swimmer who was bringing out a book into an opera singer or whatever. Like, he was an amazing man to reach into all corners. And yeah, and it always felt like he knew he had done his research so well. You know, it was an amazing interview. Yeah.
And you've been interviewed by many, many people across many, many continents and countries and broadcasters. What was Sean like? How does he fit into that?
You know, he was so unprepossessing, so easygoing in his style that I think people might underestimate what a terrific international standard interviewer he really was. The fact that he made you feel safe was fantastic. You knew he wasn't trying to catch you out in some way. The breadth and the depth of his cultural experience, the fact that he'd read the damn book,
yes,
and the feeling that, you know, he might have reservations about some aspects of it. I think he had a classical sensibility at heart, but he wasn't afraid of disruptors. He wasn't afraid of young artists. He was just extraordinarily accommodating, such a generous host. It was always great to chat. I used to call him Shawnee in my head, but nobody can know. Did anyone else call him Shawnee in to talk to Shawnee Rocks?
Yeah.
Because a huge part of it, and maybe this is a question for both of you, was the nature of the breadth of the topics that he covered here on Arena. It could have been absolutely anything on any given night, and he treated everything with the same level of respect and seriousness.
He was an immensely decent person, I think, or it seemed that's how he came across, and very humane.
Yeah.
He was driven by curiosity and interest, not by pretension or status.
Yes.
And so,
which is then how he could interview somebody who was kind of running the theatre, or somebody who's only, you know, doing their first little fringe gig. I think his knowledge and his love for what he was talking about was so evident, you know, in his Monaghan accent coming out and drawing you in, you know.
I'm going to bring in Aina Hartwick here. Aina, thanks a million for joining us. You grew up with Arena, didn't you?
I did. I was in the car with my mum this morning when we heard the news, and I kind of just realised that my connection to Arena and to Sean was through being in the car with my mum and being in the kitchen. And I think, you know, when it's radio, your first relationship with someone is their voice, and Sean's voice was just, you know, phenomenal. And I think that was kind of the first connection. And then it was the interviews and just what a breadth of knowledge and what an incredible varied insight into, you know, any subject. And I remember I got to, when I had something to kind of speak about a couple of years ago, I said, can we do Arena? Like, is that possible? Because that is all I want to do. And it was a privilege, like it really was, in the true sense of the word, because I went in kind of quite nervous, having to talk about a film, and I came out feeling like I knew the man, and we had this incredible conversation that I think ended up kind of, we ended up talking with Stanislavski and acting for what felt like about 40 minutes. I remember the ad break came on and I kind of like broke. I was so nervous and I kind of broke and I smiled at him and the two of us were grinning at each other and I was like, is this mad? Like, are we going off on an awful tangent here? And he went, no, this is great.
We did.
This
do you know
where we need to be.
We listened back to that in the office here today, the interview that you did with Sean. And it does. It's a deep dive into Stanislavski. Was that around the time that you were doing Autumn Journal, the Louis MacNeice narrative poem at the Gate? Is that right?
No, we actually, that was after. Yeah, I was back on Arena talking about Autumn Journal. This was, I think we were promoting a film called The Sparrow. And no, it wasn't. Was it around the time for Autumn Journal? But I've been lucky enough to be on Arena a couple of times and they're sort of blurring into one now. But I just remember going in very giddy and excited and yeah, talking, like having a deep dive about acting, which I think there was a kind of complicity in the room because we were smiling at each other, realizing that we could have stayed there all day and spoken about this. And I just, that image of him at the ad break going, no, this is good. We can keep going with this. It was just infectious. And it was one of those moments where, you know, Eileen said it there, I felt I knew him. And really, I think I met Sean once, maybe twice. And it was that feeling of, I think this is such, you know, testament to him that I left the studio that day feeling like I'd had this incredible experience. And I was there ostensibly to talk about and promote a film. So I'm really, really grateful to have gotten to sit with them.
Because that was a feeling that Sean gave you. You've touched on it quite briefly, Anne, because you called him obviously Shawnee when you were at home with the radio. He made you feel it's that rarest of talents in a broadcaster, that he was talking only to you and that he was your friend and that he was somebody who was a part of your life.
Yeah, that you were sort of in a state of mutual understanding. And because you're both interested in the subject at hand. It is a great skill in a broadcaster because it draws the audience in as much as the artist. And he was just that great mediator between the two. And he made all the different arts seem like not quite wholesome, but accessible and right, you know, and not frightening. There was no distrust of the arts. Even though he seemed to be such a regular guy at the same time, it was a lovely mix.
We are across the course of the programme tonight going to bring in just some clips of Sean and interviews that he did over the course of his time on Arena. We're going to listen to him in action. This is a clip of Sean interviewing Tom Murphy from an interview in 2010.
Whistle in the Dark, which was, well, the second play, I think, but the play, I think, that really launched your career. 50 years old next year, 1961, next, yes, it was first, yes, produced, sure. 2011 then. Looking back now, that wild Kearney family, are they still there today and the likes of them? Or if you revisited that, would you have to revise the whole thing?
Well, I think that people think the play is remarkably violent. There are several kinds of violence. The play is more about emotional violence. But if you take the surface stuff, it has struck me many times over the last few years that our Polish friends, immigrants, seem to be caught up, uprooted in a situation similar to what the Kearneys were involved in all those years ago.
So an adaptation for a Polish community in Ireland?
Well, I said it to a young writer a few weeks ago and his eyes dilated and I could feel his pencil getting hot in his pocket as he was hurrying home.
What about your own pencil? Is it now in the fridge or does it get any heat in it?
Well, I don't know that there is much lead in the pencil.
Does that mean we're not going to have any more writing from Tom Murphy?
Maybe something.
Well, we look forward to it if it does come, Tom.
And that is a perfect example of what he was like as an interviewer. Before I go any further, we did ask you for texts. We are not going to get to 1/100th of the texts that are coming in, but I would like to read out a few. Sean was an Irish John Peel of the arts. He was an incredible encyclopedic knowledge and a manner that felt like a beloved uncle you always wanted to listen to. Thank you, Billy. Lovely memories. I'll be driving in for my 8 p.m. night shift. It lightened my step going to work with Sean's fabulous voice, not to mention the great programme content from Not an Arts Person, and that is in capital letters. Thank you, Jer. And deepest sympathies to Sean's family and colleagues in RTE Radio 1. I loved listening to him on an arena on an almost daily basis. His gentle and incredibly insightful and informed interviewing style and his depth of knowledge of the arts was always a joy to listen to. He will be sadly missed as a familiar voice in our home. Thank you to Aideen in Dublin 3. Maybe one final question for all of you. And maybe, Aina, if you're still with us, what sort of loss to arts broadcasting in Ireland is left now that Sean's no longer with us?
It's massive, because I think my feeling of Sean's broadcasting was always that he had a way of talking about the arts as if they were... he had a sense of wonder and curiosity and passion that was genuine and was incredible. And I think often we talk about the arts in quite potentially patronizing kind of terms of, you know, or it feels like this thing that's good for us, or that, you know, we should, you know, it's like eating your greens. And it was never that with Sean. It was like, this is the human story, you know. And I think he communicated that in a way that to me was joyous and quite, you know, unexciting and mischievous. And so I think, you know, his legacy isn't, you know, just his phenomenal breadth of knowledge about the arts, but also the way that he communicated it was a kind of art itself. You know, listening to him was just that's a very happy place in my life, thinking and listening to that show. So yeah. I think that's, you know, he leaves behind a massive gap.
Eileen, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think he's very big shoes to fill, you know. His ability to kind of really be a fighter for a lot of the smaller shows or whatever. I think Culture and RTE have lost a great guy who was such a pusher of all the good stuff, you know, and he really believed in what theatre, for me, definitely, for what theatre can do. And he really kind of stood his ground and kind of brought a lot of smaller people to the forefront.
And Anne?
When you think of all he knew and all he held in terms of the cultural life of Ireland for the last, you know, 30, 40 years, it's just an astonishing loss. And you couple that with his absolute work ethic and dedication. I mean, his passion was a daily kind of giving. He was an absolute trooper and irreplaceable, I'd say.
Anne Enright, Eileen Walsh and Aina Hardwick, thank you so much for joining us. You're listening to an Arena special about the career and the life of our friend Sean Roxham. We're back after this. This is Arena on RTE Radio 1, and I'm Rick O'Shea. Joining me now on our programme are both the actor Stanley Townsend and Lynn Parker, the artistic director of Rough Magic Theatre Company. Lynn, I might start with you. There is this extraordinary outpouring of grief and of shock in the Irish arts world today, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, from the moment I woke up, the texts started coming in. And it's just so hard to believe. It really is. Because, I mean, so recently, you know, we heard him on the radio and we were working with him. He was a colleague. He worked for Rough Magic as an actor. And, you know, he was just the best pro. And when you think, like, they've been talking all day about his various skills, you know, he'd worked as a teacher, he was an actor, and then he moved into broadcasting. He was a musician. And
I only found out today that he played the tuba.
Yeah.
New information for
well,
me.
Well, the show he did with us, Pentecost, Stuart Parker's Pentecost, the character plays the trombone. Sean learned the trombone in order to play it. And not many actors could do that. But he was just all there for you. And I was just thinking how the amalgamation of skills, you know, the language skills, the music skills, the teaching skills all came together in the best possible way as a broadcaster, because you have to use all of those, you know, the sense of timing, the acute sense of timing, and the interpretation, the language, and also the ability to get people interested in things. And that was just so natural to him.
I did ask Anne Enright earlier, but you would have had a much closer view of it. What was Sean like as an actor?
He was excellent. I mean, he had the part of Lenny in Pentecost requires that really dry wit, very, very smart and effortless. And that was what Sean was. So, you know, he's playing the first scene opposite Eleanor Methven, and you have to be, you know, a tough cookie to do that. And he was just sublime, very dry, very funny, and very, very deadpan, but also emotionally all of there. So he had the whole thing.
We also have the actor Stanley Townsend with us on the phone. Stanley, you're joining us from London. Thanks for joining us on Arena. You treaded the Abbey stage with Sean in Tom Murphy's The Wake. Do I have that right?
Yes, and he played the piano in The Wake. Yeah, a man of many talents. He was unbelievable, Seanie. I remember him, yeah. We shared a dressing room, myself and Phelan Drew and David Harley. We were just talking to David about it. Anyway, Sean had to play. It was quite a complex introduction, and Phelan Drew was singing. Sean was playing Father Billy, and Phelan was playing Tom. And Tom was a nervous singer. Phelan was well able to sing. But if Sean got the introduction slightly wrong, he was verging into kind of Les Dawson territory, but he was very definitely trying to get back on track. And Phelan was leaning in, wondering when he was going to come in. And myself and David standing on the stage, and we're looking at Phelan and Sean and Tom and Father Billy, and Sean was never anything but Father Billy. It was a wonder.
You also knew Sean and his family very well, kind of on a personal level as well.
Yeah, you know, we soldiered together as young players and had great times. And yeah, I know him, knew himself and Catherine very, very well. They found each other, I think, oh God, it was 20, 21 years together. And yeah, I was lucky enough to spend time with them, and they had such a brilliant connection, such a wonderful, they just found such happiness together. And then they had their two beautiful sons, Christian and Morgan. I actually share a birthday with Christian. So yeah, they've been down to the West with us many, many times, and we've shared many, many birthdays together, and we'll do in the future. But yeah, he spent so much time with the boys and with Catherine, and they had such love together, and he was such a committed father and partner. And so as a family man, how he juggled all the balls, what he did. And it was beautiful to see them all together, and a terrible, terrible tragedy that it's so cut so short.
Lynn, Arena did a Rough Magic at 40 last year, and yourself and some of the early members of the company, like Anne Enright, and Declan Hughes and Owen Rowe. What were the memories of that show when it happened?
And Stanley Townsend as well. Huh. It was quite fun actually, because what you saw was that, you know, there was a whole sort of template for how things would work, but things were being changed up until the last minute, and he has little notes written in the script and all that. So he's kind of surfing, you know, and I wouldn't say he totally sticks to the script. He's inventing a lot. And actually, that's wonderful, you know, that because it makes it so live, and he totally controlled that room. And it, again, effortless, you know, so you've got the control of someone who really knows his stuff, but he's able to take his time, he's able to control time brilliantly, and he really knew how to set us up and showcase us.
And again, this is a thread that has already started to appear this evening, that thing of perhaps his strengths as an actor playing incredibly well in terms of his strengths as a broadcaster.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think he's the consummate broadcaster, actually, because you don't feel that there's an engine behind what he's doing, but there absolutely is. I mean, he's intellectually so precise, and my goodness, he knew all of the art forms. We kind of claim him in theatre, but he was across all of them. And good knows he must have read every book, and he did. He really was on top of the subject, and as a musician, of course. course, as well. He broadcast on Lyric too.
Sorry, Stanley, I wanted to ask you about that as well. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the good actor has a great voice and speaks well. The great actor listens brilliantly. And that was Sean's great gift, was his ability to listen. And he was genuinely interested and had such fun and laughter and lightness of touch. But his great skill was he was interested and he wanted you to speak and he wanted you to be at your best. And he'll be sadly missed.
Okay. We're going to play just another clip from one of Sean's previous interviews. This is one he did last year, and it's joyous. And it's himself and Victoria Smurfit at the launch of the TV series Rivals.
However, yeah, when we get to the Ginny Cooper book, which you read in your teens, I can't believe it.
Don't tell people. This is just between you and me, isn't it?
Of course. Okay, I won't tell a single person.
Okay, good.
These were bunkbusters. This was the term that was used.
You know, yes, but remember, we didn't have the internet. Like, I learned lots. What can I tell you? There'll always be the dog-eared pages.
Oh, specifics?
Oh, yeah, you know that. Yeah.
And did you go back and relook at them?
Well, I mean, if I admitted to that, I'd have to leave the country.
Research.
Yeah.
However, you know, there is that side. The treatment of women, let's face it, is appalling. Some of the women treat the men appallingly.
Yeah.
Sexual politics. But I'm thinking of a scene, too, and I think it's the stud who says it at one point. Why is she worrying about having a career when she has those wonderful looks? She doesn't have to need to think about a career. It's extraordinary to hear, isn't it?
Couldn't you imagine getting away with that now? I mean, you'd be in terrible trouble. But it's a period drama. What we're doing now is, sadly, a period drama I remember being very much alive in. But, you know, it is... It's the 80s. It's a long time ago. And that's to my point of... that, you know, those eggs had to be broken to make the omelette you now get, to be able to say, you don't speak to me like that, Sonny.
That is Sean talking to Victoria Smurfit last year, or flirting professionally with Victoria Smurfit. It's one of the two. I can't quite figure out which one it is. Final thoughts, maybe, and from Stanley, yours?
Just to send my condolences to Catherine and the boys and to the extended family. It's a terrible loss, that's all.
And Lynn?
And the same, but also the arts world has lost an incredible advocate, a real voice, and we are going to need people like Sean, and there aren't too many of those. So, terrible loss.
Lynn Parker, the artistic director of Rough Magic Theatre Company, and Stanley Townsend, actor, joining us from London. Thank you both so very much. A few texts. While living in the UK for many years until recently, Sean became our touchstone to home. We will miss him. Thank you, Marion and Chris. Sean had a lovely diplomatic manner of interviewing people. His insights were often astounding and sharp. Listening to him was a great pleasure. I'll miss his voice and character in my life every evening. Goodbye, Sean. Rest well. I'm just so sad. Sean Rocks was my friend as I prepared dinner. He helped me stay in touch with what was happening in the arts world, and I loved the way he chatted with everyone and knew his stuff. In my dreams, I wanted to be interviewed by him. Bless him, his wife and his boys. I'm desperately sad. I can't think what his family are thinking today. Thank you, Lynn in Cork. I'm going to have some more music. We have Mark Redmond with us, but also being joined by Derry Farrell. For both of you, maybe Derry, you'll tell us what the two of you are going to do for us now.
We're going to sing a song called John of Dreams, and it's a lovely song about, you know, having the final sleep, like, you know, and it was written by a man called Bill Caddick from Scotland, and I remember briefly talking to Sean about this a couple of years ago. I was very surprised that he knew everything about the song, but then when I was leaving to go home, I was talking to Mark, and we weren't one bit surprised that, like that, Lynn, that he knew everything about the song, you know. So I'll sing that song for you now. When midnight comes and people homeward thread, seek now your blankets and your feathered bed. Home comes a rover, his journey's over. Heal up the night time, old John O'Dreams. Heal up the night time to
to old John O'Dreams. And across the hill the sun is gone, Mr. A. And tomorrow's cares are many dreams away. But the stars, they are flying, and your candle's dying, and ye love the darkness to old Gion O'Dreams. Both man and master in the night are one, and all men are equal when the day is done. The prince and ploughman, the slave and free man, all find their comforts in old Gion O'Dreams. All find their comforts in old Gion O'Dreams. And when sleep it comes and dreams come running clear, the hawks of morning will never
Derry Farrell, thank you for that. And again, Mark Redmond on Ellen Pipes as well. We'll hear from both of you a little bit later on here in the programme. I'm going to call in Gavin Friday. Gavin, how are you?
Hello, Rick. How are you?
Tell me your initial thoughts today on hearing the news.
Well, first, my condolences to his family, friends and all the Arena and RTE colleagues. It really hit not just me, but so many friends and other fellow artists texting and calling today. It really was a shock. And the first time I met him was RTE in 2000. I was working on with Pat McCabe a series of radio plays called Emerald Germs of Ireland. I was working on the music and we recorded everything in RTE, and he was one of the many actors, and it was pretty insane. Pat McCabe, McCabean Macabre, piece of radio, radio theatre, the likes you'll never hear it again. It was quite extraordinary. And I think, you know, McCabe and his butcher boyisms, I think Sean totally was on the same page in seconds, you know. He just got in there. That's the first time I'd experienced or got to know him. And then really, it's true Arena as a fan and a listener, but also as an artist going on talking about my own career with the Virgin Prunes or very many different subjects. He'd call me in, sadly, usually when somebody passes.
Well, what was he like as an interviewer, as far as you were concerned?
His real thing, I think, was this personable, down-to-earth manner, the way he would conduct a conversation, along with his vast knowledge across the whole artistic disciplines. And in that, he sort of bridged this gap for his listeners between high art and the ordinary person. He sort of demystified things like opera and ballet for a regular audience and made them tangible. And that may sound easy, but that's a real skill, like a phenomenal skill, actually.
We also have on the line Brian F. O'Byrne. Brian, how are you? What were your thoughts when you first heard the news today?
Yeah, you know, I was first of all condolences to his family and friends and all his colleagues, you there at Arena and RTÉ and Lyric. I was shocked, you know, like everybody else. I'm struck. I mean, I echo everything that everyone has said tonight or earlier on in the show. I was struck even by listening to the different voices tonight. Of what a funnel he kind of was for artists to get a message across, or not a message, but to be heard in different ways. And Sean, I think it never felt like an interview with anyone. It felt like in conversation with Sean. And he made, as Gavin's just said, there was no highbrow or lowbrow at all. It felt like a discussion of the arts was the same as discussing the Gaelic football match on the weekend or the weather outside or anything else, that the arts are a part of our life in Ireland. And with Arena on at the time it's on, and because we are still a country that seems to listen to the radio and stay with it, that it's on at 7 o'clock, I don't think is to be taken light or for granted, and that Sean was the person to, at the same time, do a brilliant job of representing the public in the questions that he would ask. But also, I think anybody who worked in the arts knew that Sean came from the arts and was always on the side of everybody that he talked with. And so it felt as a listener and a participant on one occasion that it was a sharing of his utter love of the arts that was just a normal part of being a healthy human being and being healthy in society.
And did your career and his crossover as an actor, I seem to remember hearing you on Arena a while back.
Yeah, just once, very briefly. Years ago, that I was in something, I came back from America and I did a play by Tom McIntyre called Good Evening, Mr. Collins. And it was put on shortly afterwards, and I was back in America, and Sean took over the part of Michael Collins. And when I met him there, it was last year, I would remind him the times that I met him, that when I walked into the Abbey Theatre a year or two later, a 10-foot banner of Sean playing Michael Collins and not me, maybe hung in the lobby of the Abbey. But I would like to say that nobody has mentioned yet, and I think he wore his talent rather like his absolutely fantastic hair, which was kind of this loose and so beautiful that that you couldn't help but have a certain awe about the man. And he was a gentleman. And his loss is, I think it's actually pretty profound for us all. It feels like we've lost a champion.
Brian F. O'Byrne and Gavin Friday, thank you so much for joining us here on this special Arena tonight. I'm truly devastated at the death of Sean Rocks. I lost my beloved son last year, and so great was the trauma I couldn't engage with the outside world. Sean helped me find my way back. I met him once, briefly, after his interview with Sebastian Barry. You'll be missed, Sean. May your gentle soul rest in peace. And that's from Catherine Clancy. And I always looked forward to my long evening commute, perfectly timed to enjoy uninterrupted Sean on Arena. He had a remarkable gift for making every interviewee, whether a global star or a recent graduate, feel central to the conversation. I feel a great sense of loss at his passing. I can only imagine how deeply his family, his close friends and colleagues must feel it. The arts world has lost a giant. Mark, you are going to play something else for us on the Inn Pipes. What is it?
Yeah, I'm going to play a lovely old air called Band of Aglana, which is, it means the dark one of the glen. And the reason I chose to play this one is in early September 2020, after the first lockdown, I was in Studio 7, whatever it was, over in the old building. And it was one of the first times that Sean had live music back in the studio after the first lockdown. And he was just buzzing. He was so happy. And it was a memorable night. Everywhere else was so quiet. Even the roads were so quiet on the way up. It was just brilliant. And I spent a lot of the show just sitting off, relaxed in the studio because he was happy to have me there. And he liked this one. It was in advance of a concert we had coming up with the Symphony Orchestra a few days later. So he was always good to plug concerts like that. So this is Band of Atlanta.
Mark Redmond on the Illan Pipes. You are listening to an arena special on the passing of our friend Sean Rocks. Colm Tobin in Los Angeles, welcome.
Thank you.
The last time you were in this studio with Sean, you were marking Paul Durkin's 80th birthday.
Yeah, Sean had an extraordinary gift as a broadcaster, which was that he could neither spoke up nor down to anybody. That he used his own voice, and his own voice managed, I suppose, to capture something about what was happening in writing and in the theatre and in other areas of the arts in Ireland. In other words, he was genuinely fascinated by the process because he'd been involved in the process. And those of us who saw him on the Abbey stage or in plays like Frank Pig or Says Hello or in The Curate Troy would have known, as an actor that he had a sort of great integrity. He was never someone who, he wasn't someone who sought limelight. He was someone who sought to get things right. And so if someone said, oh, Sean Rocks is here, would mean immediately someone solid, someone enthusiastic, someone serious, and someone also just technically as a broadcaster. In other words, he knew how long the questions should be. He knew how long he had. He knew how he should do the sort of, let's say, the sort of rhythm of the piece. And so he was absolutely brilliant in every way. I think he made an enormous difference in the sense that if say, it was a complex piece of theatre, he would be fascinated by it. He would make that enthusiasm absolutely clear to his audience without, as I say, talking up or down to anybody. So he was a natural broadcaster, or he seemed like a natural broadcaster. But of course, he was an actor in broadcasting. And he found a voice which seemed to me very close to his own voice.
which gave him, I think, meant he had an extraordinary influence because people trusted him.
And what was it like to be interviewed by him when you were the guest?
Well, you know, first of all, you had the enthusiasm, you had the warmth, you had the idea, his understanding that every work, you know, from a poem to like the whole career of Paul Durkin, came from a lot of work, you know, a lot of preparation, a lot of rehearsal, as it were, and that he understood that process, and he understood that, well, what you were talking about was something that came from a lot of work. So I suppose he had a sense of, also he had a sense that this mattered. This mattered to him emotionally as much as it did intellectually, that reading a book or going to a play was something fundamental in his life and something he was dead curious about as to how it would work. You know, as to how it was working, where the inspiration came from, or you know how the work itself got put into place. So yeah, he was first of all completely solid in the sense that his question would never go all over the place. His question was relevant, but his question was so smart. But without him ever trying to sound smart, he was smart. That's a really hard thing to do.
And in terms of his voice and as a loss to the arts on Irish airwaves and in terms of broadcasting, what do you think that loss is?
I think that loss is enormous because the whole idea still remains in Ireland that the theatre, if a theatre is touring, that it's for everybody to come and see. There's no sense, I think, of an elite audience for theatre or an elite audience for novels or an elite audience for poetry. And he was a conduit. He was someone who made that absolutely clear that for him personally, this mattered. And it mattered, I think, for him emotionally, it mattered for him intellectually, it mattered for him as a citizen. And so he brought that to broadcasting. He created an audience for difficult work or for a new novel. He created an audience that, and he made it sound as though it would be the most natural thing in the world for someone to go to a play or someone to read a novel. And that his job was, you know, his job, I suppose, was to connect the audience to the writer or the actor or the composer, and to do that in a way that would allow the initial voice in the work to actually spread and matter.
You very much did. Colm Tobin, thank you so much for joining us
on
Arena. Sean Rocks carried me to my home place many's an evening with his easygoing, informative style on Arena. He made the arts accessible to all as an ordinary Joe Soap who didn't know Sean. I know there are many like me out there who will feel his loss. Thank you, Robin. We will take a break and we're back after this. And you are listening to an Arena special tonight on RTE Radio 1. Paul Lynch, good evening and thanks for joining us on Arena.
Hi, Rick.
I saw today, earlier on, my Instagram feed was pretty much solidly only about Sean, and I saw the story that you told about him when you were mentioning him today. Maybe you tell us about that.
Yeah, and I just want to say I was just terribly sad when I heard the news this morning. You know, so sad for his wife and children, his extended family, of course, and his colleagues, and so sad too, because, you know, Sean Rocks, he was a lighthouse for the arts in Ireland. That's what he was. And when I first started doing radio, I quickly learned that the really good broadcasters have a rare skill. They can instantly put you at your ease so that even though you're about to do a live broadcast in a studio, which, you know, is an intimidating thing, you forget where you are and you find yourself just having a good conversation. And Sean had interviewed me 4 or 5 times over the years. But there's the story that I mentioned today demonstrates, I feel, just how good he was. So in November 23, it was the day after winning the Booker Prize, and I was in the midst of a media storm in London that began about 7 a.m. that day and went on to 8 p.m. that night. And I had just 2 10-minute breaks, and I'd done about 23 or 24 interviews. And by 7 p.m., I was absolutely delirious, and I had simply no idea how I could go on. And my publicist, Margot Wheel, was accompanying me, and we had just exited the CNN building and were on our way to Channel 4 News for a live broadcast. And we were on the street. It was dark. It was icy cold. It was raining, and we were trying to hail a taxi. And then her phone rang as the taxi pulled up, and she spoke into the phone and, without saying a single word to me, handed across the phone. I had no idea what was going on, and I asked her, "Who is this?" And she said, "It's Sean Rocks. You're live on Arena in 30 seconds. Now, here's the thing. Nobody had told me about this interview, so I was not ready. the windows were down in the taxi and icy air was streaming in. Margot couldn't work the windows and was waving frantically at the driver while trying not to use her voice to get him to roll them, to get him to roll them up. And I was seconds away from going live to the Nation in a taxi, here and around London, completely exhausted. And I thought, this is just too absurd and I don't know how I'm going to do this. And then Sean's voice came through on the phone, that rich, melodious, warm, always eager Monaghan voice. And in an instant, that freezing taxi and London were gone. They disappeared. And I was back home by the fireside having a chat with a friend. And that's how it was. That's what he could do. You know, he was a mug of hot chocolate on the radio. And that was his gift. There is an art to the interview. And for Sean, it was to make it into a chat as though you might have met him in a bar or a cafe and he was just eager to hear what you were up to. And yet the weight of knowledge and the research behind the conversation and whatever the subject matter, whether it was cerebral or fun, highbrow or lowbrow, he always met it in the same way with this openness and curiosity and just the gift for easy conversation, almost a bit of banter sometimes. And yet all the while he was communicating so much to a broad audience. You know, the importance of the arts, how integral they are to our culture. And he was knitting us all together, this story of Ireland and its artists. And he made it feel accessible and just vital and open to everyone, no matter what your knowledge or your background was. And that, Rick, was his gift.
It very much was. Paul Lynch, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us tonight. Amanda Coogan, performance artist. Amanda, visual art on the radio isn't always an obvious fit, but Sean had a great love for the medium that you work in.
Absolutely, Rick. And look, at my heart goes out to you, to the whole team up there and his beautiful family who we've been hearing so much about. But Sean was incredible with visual arts on the radio, you know, the wrong medium to describe embodied the visual world. But he was fantastic. I mean, I spoke to Sean on many occasions about different exhibitions, and it's because he was such an incredible communicator that he could bridge that gap in that very incredible way. And as Paul's just said, open the door for artists to a broader audience, to the listeners of Arena. And for me, he really helped me tell the kind of the story of the exhibition. And I didn't even realize when I went in first to Sean, I chatted to him a couple of times, that he was pulling out a story from me so that I would be able to communicate a visual exhibition to him. And that was through his prompting and his questioning and a real deep empathy, I think. And he was curious. And, you know, as an artist who works in the studio by yourself all day in this kind of dream world, to be live in a radio studio is terribly intimidating. And with him, you felt like you were just going in for a chat and you were going to somebody who was warm, who was on your side, you know. But his generosity, you know, was incredible, because last year I talked to him on Arena with my deaf colleague Leanne Quigley, the artistic director of the Dublin Theatre of the Deaf. And to say that interview with the deaf person, with the studio full of sign language interpreters, was frontier stuff. And he was so beautifully supportive and caring and loving in that interview with Leanne and myself.
I'm very much conscious that unfortunately the chat has to end here because time is catching up on us. Amanda Coogan, thank you so much for your time on the programme tonight. Fiona Grork, the upcoming New Ireland Professor of Poetry, congratulations on that. What was it like to be on air with Sean, and how important was his promotion of poetry on the national airwaves?
Well, yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm really pleased to be able to pay tribute to Sean, who was a one-off. You know, a lot of interviewers approach poetry as something that needs to be explained. And they might ask a question like, what's the story behind this poem? As if the story behind the poem is more interesting than the poem itself. But not Sean. Sean would be straight in with the kind of question that you'd been really hoping somebody would ask. And it was always informed and researched and thoughtful and careful. And that's so rare when it comes to poetry, as I say. But the thing about Sean was when he was talking to poets, he talked like a poet to poets, and like a musician when he was with musicians, and like a painter when he was with artists. And first and foremost, he talked like a listener when he was thinking of the listeners. And he just had a very unique combination of gifts, really, which isn't to say that he couldn't be mischievous, because he was quite mischievous, and he had a very charming way of getting you to say things that you hadn't really intended to say at all. Nothing embarrassing, because he was far too professional for that, but just the kind of things that would just perk up a radio interview and make it different and make it fun. It was always fun to be interviewed by Sean, as well as to listen to Arena when he was conducting it, because he was just extremely good at it. And I'll miss him terribly. It's strange to think of publishing books that I won't be able to talk about with him on air. I think, honestly, condolences to all the team there, to Kay, to Paula, to everybody who made those live events work so beautifully as well. And it was an education to watch that in action. I was always full of admiration and awe for him.
And thank you so much, Fiona Gourk, for that. Tara O'Rourke, mezzo-soprano with the Irish National Opera. Sean had a great love of classical music. Tara, did you enjoy being interviewed by him when you were here?
Always, always. If I could just start by expressing my condolences to you all there, his team at RTE, that he was so wildly proud of. And of course, to his family and friends at this time. Sean was actually the first interview I ever had live on radio before I was as the singer that I am now. And he was as kind and as gentlemanlike then as he was even before we spoke about my Met debut. His knowledge of the industry was absolutely astronomical, oftentimes knowing much more about the repertoire I was singing than I did myself. But he never held that against us at all. He was an pure, pure gentleman that was full of such effervescent energy when it came to the promotion of anything any Irish artist was doing, whether that was at home or abroad. And he was always, always so enthusiastic when you had something new.
Tara O'Rourke, I'm sorry, time has caught up with us. Thank you so much again for taking the time out to talk to us tonight here on Arena. I hope that John Creedon will indulge us for a couple of minutes. We're going to finish out tonight with Derry Farrell playing for us. I'm Rick O'Shea. That has been our special Arena tonight, celebrating our friend and colleague Sean Rocks, who died yesterday. Thank you so much to everybody who texted in their droves tonight about how much they appreciated and cared about Sean and his work. We'd like to thank all our colleagues here at RTE for their kindness and support in making the programme, and our thoughts this evening are with his beloved Catherine and his darling boys Christian and Morgan. Cull us off, Sean.
Of all the money that e'er I had, I spent it in good company. And of all the harm that e'er I done, alas, it was to none but me. And all I've done for want of wit, by memory I can't recall. So fill to me the parting glass, and good night, and I be with you all. And had I money enough to spend, and leisure time for to sit a while, well, there is a sweetheart all in this town, and she has my heart beguiled. Her rosy cheeks and ruby lips, I own she has me heart enthralled. So fill to me the parting glass, and good night, and joy be with you all. And of all the comrades that e'er I had, well, they're sorry for my going away. And of all the the sweethearts that e'er I longed. Well, they wish me one more day to stay. And as it falls upon my lot that I shall rise and you should fall, well, I'll gently rise and softly call. Good night, and I be with you all. Good night, and I be with you all.